This all got tilled up last night. We had a comment a little while ago asking why we use straw to cover the garlic. There's a couple of reasons. The first one is to protect it through the winter from the freeze-thaw cycle and from those really killing winds when it's dry and cold. Anything that's exposed tends to get burned off, at least where we are. So you put down a nice thick layer of straw and that really helps to insulate those little seed cloves that are in the ground. And the other reason is to help suppress weeds. As you can see where the straw is, there are some weeds, not going to deny that. But when you go over here, to these couple of rows that didn't get straw last season, you can really see the difference. Got my little helper there and a stroller and the garden wagon with all of the plants. So I'm out here planting kohlrabi, and as you can see, they are really close together compared to any other brassicas like cabbage or kale that you might plant. That's because the kohlrabi itself grows to be about the size of your fist, and it really only needs that much space. So that is plenty of space. That's a decent hand width apart. Now, when I'm planting out seedlings, always, always make sure you really water them. I watered these about 10 minutes ago. They're really saturated. You don't want to put anything into the ground that's thirsty already. It's just going to struggle. Unless, of course, there's lots of rain coming. But even then, you want to make sure your plants are well watered so that they're nice and happy when you put them in the ground. So I'm going to try and do this with one hand. Just a little demonstration. I'm sure most of you are familiar with how to just plant things in the ground, but otherwise, for those who aren't, you just dig a hole and stick your plant in there. And it's ready to go. The rows I planted yesterday are still looking really great. Haven't seen any cutworm damage. And as hopefully you can see, the plants are really nice and vibrant still. They haven't wilted even in this hot sun. And that has to do with the fact that I watered them really well before I planted them. And now I'm all set up to put in some more broccoli and collards. I tilled up this section in anticipation of planting onions in the next couple of days. So I'm back at our rhubarb patch. As you can see from these white bulbs that are appearing on all the plants, it's about to go into flower. If you're looking to extend the harvest time of your rhubarb plants, and I don't know why you wouldn't be, everybody loves rhubarb, you want to cut those off at least a couple of times and then eventually let it go to flower because that's what the plant needs to do. But you want to cut those off so that the stalks keep growing and don't go woody. So I'm just going to take my scissors or Fiskars and literally just snip those off. As you can see, there's blooms further down the stalk. So if you want to be really thorough, you could cut that stalk off further down. And make sure that you are not consuming or touching the leaves with too much bare skin, it is toxic, and I find that the leaves actually give my skin a rash. Not very long lasting, but it is unpleasant while it's there. I would assume most people know how to harvest rhubarb, but just in case anybody doesn't, you can see all those beautiful stalks in there. What you want to do is, get this one out of the way, is twist and pull, and you're looking to release the stalk from the base. You don't want to cut it up above the surface. You don't want to really break it if you can avoid that, because by pulling the stalk off from the base of the plant, so pull and twist, by pulling it off like that, you can see where it was attached to the plant, you're sending a signal to the plant that that stalk is missing and that it needs to regenerate. If you are just cutting it off an inch or two above that point where it joins the plant, it doesn't actually get the message that that stalk is missing, and it won't, over time, it won't regenerate those leaves. So to keep the plant healthy, you absolutely want to make sure you're getting as much of this basal attachment point as you possibly can. So as I said, it's a pull and a twist simultaneously. So you're just trying to loosen it. And something else to keep in mind is that you don't want to harvest too many stalks from one little cluster. So you can see this. This right here is one cluster of stalks. So I would probably take one out of this. You can see there's one nice healthy one here down at the bottom. And then I would leave this one here to regenerate. These smaller leaves that are, so you can see this one's sort of not great to begin with. The stalk is actually soft and quite not good anymore. So as you're harvesting, if you see stalks that are no good, get rid of them. Pull them out of the plant, and then that way the plant will regenerate and get healthier and produce more good stalks for you. In my experience, the harder and more frequently you harvest, the more rhubarb you get. The plants respond in kind. If nobody's harvesting and all it needs to produce are those first spring stalks, and then it can go to flower and do its life cycle, why would it produce more? So there's my stack of rhubarb. I'm going to trim it all up, take those leaves off, and then we'll be heading inside. So after I put Junior to bed, I've been coming out and tilling. We're hoping this week to plant a lot of what's in the greenhouse out into the garden, mainly because the weather is indicating that it's going to stay nice, and we have rain forecasted for Friday, and it would be really good if we can get most of the stuff in the ground before that rain, so it all gets watered in, and then we'll be on to the battle of the weeds. We've had some little visitors into the garden last night. Looks to me, might be deer. If there's anybody else who has a guess, let me know. Getting more and more friendly, aren't you? A little bit more brave every time we feed you. All of these brassicas are looking great. I'm not seeing any cutworm damage thus far, even with all those kohlrabis that are really close together, which is kind of funny because I was anticipating some of them getting knocked out. It's all looking really good. We're in the area that Frank seeded, and that is definitely pea germination. Nice and thick. You can see the line of the seedlings going off into the distance. Once upon a time, these metal stakes were used for our cherry tomatoes. We would tie them all up. Obviously,
become overgrown. It's been a few years since we've done this, so we're going to have to move these bars and create a new cherry tomato patch. It is most efficient, we find, to actually tie up your cherry tomatoes if you can. That way they're not in the dirt and you don't have to clean them very much, and it's a lot easier for harvest.
Those little beauties with the red in the leaves are beets, which is really exciting. I can't go down the row to see how many more we've got germinated, but I can see some. It rained last night, so it's really muddy. But this is good news.
You can see these two rows in front of me are peas, and they are up with force. These are the cherry bushes, and you can see we've got at least a couple little cherries set to start growing. We've got currants forming on the currant bushes now. Look at these beautiful apple blossoms.
It's the morning of May 19th. Thought I'd come out here and check. I haven't been out here for a couple days. Well, it's been raining and doing its thing. I've been doing other things. I don't see any real sign of germination yet, which isn't that surprising. The ground is moist just under the surface, so I feel pretty good that there's probably roots penetrating down into the subsoil, and in a couple days we'll probably have something. And then over here, there's a big, thick patch of raspberries. And they're gonna bear. Every one of these that have green on them will bear. So if we have the right conditions, last year we didn't have the best conditions, this will be just full of raspberries. And I know it's not, for anybody who grows raspberries, they're supposed to be up nice and neat on trellises and everything else. What we typically do is we just let them grow like this, and then we'll pick spots in the vines and we'll clear them out so that we can stand there and harvest. I might actually create them in the next day or two. And that way it's just a thick mat, and more plants the merrier, because what we sort of focus on is making sure we have lots and we have healthy stands so that they'll keep growing. And this stand here actually started, it's funny actually, these rhubarbs, they used to be the initial row, and we planted the rhubarb on the end, and this is how far over I've let the stand migrate over the years, so that it's constantly moving itself into fresh land. And it's about twice the size, but again, it's been migrated. I'm right fascinated by the fact that there isn't a single plant that's been cut off by cutworm. I came out here to show it to you, and there isn't a single one. So this I wanted to show you is another raspberry patch. Again, same theory, but with this one, as it grows, what I tend to do is this thick section here, I'll till right down the middle of that, and I'll make a new pathway, and I'll let this section over here fill in, and I'm moving them back and forth. Well, I'm not moving them, they're moving themselves, and I'm just creating the conditions so that they can transition.
So I'm out here harvesting our asparagus, which has been growing like crazy because of this beautiful weather we've been having. For anybody who doesn't know how to harvest asparagus, all you need is a knife. You don't want to harvest or cut it high up on the stalk, above the soil. On a slight angle, you want to put your knife into the soil and just cut that stalk below the surface of the soil. It's a lot easier to do when you've got two hands working at once, but that's what you're looking for. Nice, beautiful stalk of asparagus. Now, if they get a little bit long, some of the ones we have gotten a little bit away from me, you just sort of find where that stalk starts getting tender, snap it, and then that's going to be delicious to eat this
this more tough part, you can just throw back into the garden.
Here's some of that beautiful purple asparagus I was telling you that we grew. It does turn green again when you cook it, but if you're putting it into a salad or eating it raw, it is just beautiful. This is my asparagus haul for today. Not too bad if I say so myself. This is actually from yesterday. I just didn't have a chance to process it all, and that's from one patch. And then this is from about four different patches, some of them that were really covered in the weeds that I showed you before. Now, some of them are absolutely getting long and unruly. I just didn't have the chance to harvest any sooner, so you can see how really long that is. What I will do is just start at the top and start trimming down. Sometimes they can be tender quite a ways down, and sometimes they'll start getting fibrous somewhere up there. So wherever it's no longer good to eat, I will just cut that off, and really nothing's lost. Some of them as well are getting a little bit frond-like, because as I said, I did leave some of these a little bit long, and that's okay. These ones are still quite flexible. Some of them, if you're harvesting, they will be really, really woody all up to the stalk. And because it is quite early in the season, I cut them all off at this point. Later in the season, you want to leave them and not cut them off so that the plant can start regenerating and getting strong again for next year. So I'm going to be cleaning and processing these. I'll blanch them and I'll stick them in my dehydrator. So I'm in the process of cleaning up this asparagus. I'm trimming off the tough ends and any gross little bits off the asparagus. I'm grading it. I've got the really thin ones, sort of medium-sized ones, and these really, really big honking stalks. That's so that when I'm blanching them, I can do them at different times according to the size of them, and nothing will get overcooked. Now, as I'm cleaning, I just wanted to show you. I have some that definitely have some bug damage, I guess you'd call that. Some of them are really, you know, a little malformed. Might not be perfect. You couldn't really sell that. But they are delicious. They're totally edible, and I'm still going to use them because at the end of the day, I'm looking for food value here. It doesn't have to be pretty or perfect. It just needs to be edible and delicious. Okay, this is my beautiful dehydrator. It's been running all night with the asparagus in it. 11 pounds of asparagus, by the way. I weighed it before I put it in here. Looking beautiful. When you're dehydrating, it's important to make sure that the chunks are fairly similar in size. Otherwise, you're going to be picking through and pulling at those big ones that aren't dry yet. And what I did was actually, if I can get this one out, I trimmed off all of the tops just because they are pretty. So I'll end up putting the tops in a jar separately and all of the stalks in another jar together. And then that way I can use them as I want them. And what I ended up doing with, oh, not that one. Yeah, that one. The bigger stalks, they don't look very big right now because they're sort of halfway dehydrated, but these bigger stalks I sliced up and I'm going to turn these into a powder when they're fully dry. And then that way I can easily add that powder to anything. I can make a soup broth with it, I can throw that into scrambled eggs, I can do anything I want with that powder, and the rest of them will stay chunks. It's still not done dehydrating, but I just wanted to show you how much the product shrinks when you dehydrate it. At the back you can see some of those stalks, and even those are smaller than when they went in, but you can see compared to these front ones, which are much more dry, just how much mass and size they lose. That's just the water content coming out. So when they're done, I will definitely show you what it all looks like. I'm willing to bet that this 11 pounds of asparagus reduces down to less than a pound of dried product. So there's the final product.
11 pounds of a fresh asparagus turns into 15.35 ounces of dried. As you can see on the left, hopefully, those are the tops of the stalks. In the middle are just the plain old stalk pieces. And I know some of them look a little yellow. Those are the purple stalks that once they're blanched turn a little green, and then when you dry them they turn a little yellow. They still totally taste like asparagus. And then on the right, in the more empty jar, are the little pieces I'm going to grind into powder, I should say. I'm going to wait until I'm done dehydrating all of the asparagus for the season, and then I'm going to grind it up all at once, mainly because my blender will actually grind it better when there's more than just that little bit.
It is 8 o'clock in the morning, and if you can tell, it's already 20 degrees in the greenhouse. We have a heat advisory for today, so we're going to try and avoid being in the greenhouse anymore today. I've already done the watering, and the plant should be just fine. Okay, buddy, you gotta leave it now. Here's our window box again. It looks like something's been digging in the spinach seed again, so I don't think we're destined to have very much spinach in this box, but that's okay. Because, if you look carefully, we have radishes that are starting to form up. I did sow the seed very thick. So you can see there's lots of them in there. What will happen is as I harvest these bigger ones, then the ones that are not so big will have room and then they'll start bulbing out. Frank has planted some of these brassicas out in the field, but as you can see, we still have quite a few left. The cabbages are still not in the ground, for the record. These are the pumpkin plants that will produce the hullless seeds, so you can eat them very easily. We still have 12 left for all the mouse damage that we sustained for this variety, so I'm pretty happy with that. I've been transplanting melons. We've got cantaloupes, honeydews, and watermelon. This cucumber in the container is starting to get really nice and big. It won't be long before we're able to tie that up to the stakes. It's about 10 after 6 in the morning. As you can see, these eggplants have sort of folded themselves up. It's because it's been a little bit chillier in here. We haven't been heating the greenhouse because the temperatures have been nicely above freezing overnight, so there hasn't been a need to. Last night we left the door and vents between the greenhouses open just to help regulate the temperature a little bit more. So it's been a little bit cooler in here overnight. It's about 6 degrees right now, and that's a little chilly for the eggplants. They'll be fine, but as you can see, when they are a little bit chilly, they just tuck themselves up a little bit. The sun will come out, and then they will unfold and keep on growing. I'm getting towards the end of all of the vines that need transplanting, as you can see. These heating mats are starting to get empty. We've had some more mouse damage in the sunflowers that haven't yet germinated. Now I'm sure they won't germinate because those mice have dug up the seeds and had a feast last night. You can see all of those pots that have just been dug up. So I'll pull all of those out and we'll start again. So this morning we are going to transplant these potatoes. They're looking beautiful, nice big plants. I'm excited to get this done. So when we pull out a cell, you can see that these roots are nicely formed. Not too many of them. It's not a tight root ball. We're going to transplant these and they'll just keep on getting bigger. Now with these potatoes, I'm not too worried about putting the soil a little higher on the stalk. With potatoes, if anybody doesn't know, when you plant them, especially with seed potatoes, you plant them in the garden and they sprout up, and then you have this plant above the soil. And what you do is you come along with your hoe and you actually cover the plant over with soil, and then it grows and you cover it over with soil again. And what happens is all of the different growth points turn into root points that turn into potatoes. So you actually want to keep covering this plant. When I plant this in the ground, we're going to be doing that as well. You plant it a little deeper, it'll grow, you cover it, it'll grow. So that's how potatoes work. So I'm not being overly careful about making sure that I'm staying at the exact same height. Again, nice roots develop there. Now any that are really little like this, and I have a few cells, I'm just going to condense all into the same cell pack or cell packs, depending on how many I have, and leave those in the tray to get bigger. Let's check the roots. Yeah, there's not very much in the way of root development here, so I'm probably just going to keep these in the cell packs. wanted to just talk a minute about watering. When you're watering, and this goes for pots or for even plants in your garden, you want to make sure that it's dried out a little bit. You don't want to be watering already wet soil. But when you do water, you want to fully saturate. You don't want to just surface water. If you are just sprinkling enough water to get the surface of the soil wet, then what you're doing is encouraging the roots of the plant to stay at the surface. And that's going to result in needing more and more water because it can't actually find water or doesn't have roots down deep. And it's just doing a disservice to your plants and to yourself. So this applies in your garden as well. If you have to water your garden, you want to use a drip hose or a sprinkler or something and leave it for a while and make sure that ground is really, really saturated. That way the roots of the plant are going to go really nice and deep. And if it does get a little bit drier, it has a much greater chance of surviving that because the roots are really well established. In your garden, be it perennials or the veggie garden, if the roots of the plants are really shallow because you've just been standing there with the sprayer attachment on your hose and have just been sort of like, you know, sprinkling the water around like that, you're going to find that the plants just don't do very well and are not very resilient when it comes to maybe a bit of drought or if you go away for the weekend and don't water, things like that. So moral of the story is really water deeply when you do water. These onions are ready for a haircut again, as you can see. I'm going to trim them again today, and I'm hoping to plant them out sometime in the next 2 or 3 days, weather depending. I'm almost done all of the transplanting in the greenhouse for the season. I think I have 2 trays left of cucumbers, and then that should be it. Everything else will go out into the field. These melons are really starting to look nice and perky. They've definitely grown since I transplanted them. Okay, so we are going to plant up a window box with herbs as an example of some container gardening you might do on your balcony or on your porch. So I've got thyme, parsley, sage, and 2 types of basil. So I've created 5 wells in this space that I think are okay for spacing. It is going to be a little bit tight, but I'm assuming that I'm going to be harvesting the basil quite often, so it's not going to get too big and bushy. The parsley is going to get used, so it's not going to get too big and bushy. And if it does, it does. What's the worst that happens? So, pull out that parsley plant. Nice roots developed on there, and I'm going to put this on the edge. For anybody who doesn't know, parsley can grow quite large. It can become quite a big plant, especially when those leaves are quite full. So what I figure here is that at least some of the leaves will be going off the edge and not taking up valuable growing space. And then I'm going to put in, so I have Thai basil and I have regular Genovese basil. The Genovese is what you would use in your typical Italian cooking. It's what generally everybody uses as basil, and then the Thai basil is what you would use in Thai cooking or in spring rolls or those cold rice wrapped rolls, and it's quite delicious. So I'm going to put in one of these as well. I'm going to put in my Thai basil right over here, firm that in, my nice beautiful Genovese basil, and you make pestos with this, you put it in your tomato sauces, anything at all. It's actually really good on tomato sandwiches. Just put a couple of leaves, really, really nice. And then I've got thyme. Thyme is more of a low bush, so it'll get, you know, about that big, about that tall. But if you keep trimming it, it stays a little bit more compact. And then I'm going to put sage in the corner. And sage, again, will get quite tall and somewhat bushy, so I'm assuming some of it's going to overlap the container. Sage is great, of course, in your Thanksgiving cooking, but you can use it so many other places. It's really good if you have a lot of mosquitoes. Take a few leaves if you're doing a bonfire or something, throw that into the bonfire. That'll help deal with the mosquitoes. But of course, you can eat it in many different ways. So there's our herb box, and I'm going to be back in just a minute with some lettuces and nasturtium. Okay, so I've got four nasturtium plants here. The two on the outside are one variety. It's a little bit taller, and the two on the inside are the same variety, and they're a little bit shorter. Not hugely appreciable, but I think it'll make a difference in this box. The taller ones will overlap a little bit. And this box is going to be a little bit crowded with four nasturtium plants, but I don't really care. I want to make it really nice and full and beautiful. So I'm going to just dig out my four spots, make sure that it's nice and even, and I'm trying to, of course, keep the plants in the center of the box. Look at the roots on that. So I'm just very gently going to tease some of these apart. Not too much. You don't want to damage too many roots, but you do want to just sort of open that up a little bit. Push that down and in. Really firm that soil. Again, just sort of open up those roots, especially on the bottom. And I'm going to make sure this gets a really good watering. For a couple of reasons, I'm watering it really well. First off, because I did manipulate the roots, so they're a little bit shocked. I want to make sure that they have lots of access to water so that they can recover. And also because the plants, despite my suggestions to everybody, were a little bit dry when I transplanted them. So I want to make sure that they're not thirsty. They're just going to settle in really nicely, and that'll be great. All right, so here's what we've planted today. We've got our lettuce, which is just gorgeous. Kale, nasturtiums, herbs. And I realized as I was walking around that I forgot to put dill in my herb box, but that's okay. I think I might stick a little bit of dill in with the cucumber plant. And then our pepper. Well, I told you radishes were a fairly quick crop, and I'm going to show you just how quick. Look at that beautiful little radish. That's going to be part of our lunch today. So what you do is you just sort of pull the leaves back, and you're looking for ones that are nice and plump. Just try and pull it out without disturbing too many of those other radishes in there. And then that'll make room for other ones to get nice and big. Oh, we got some nice ones down here. Find one more.
Well, that one back there is nice too.
Okay. There's our radishes, our first harvest of radishes. I'm going to make a nice addition to our salad. And so are these leaves, actually. Radish leaves are delicious. I wouldn't want to sit there and eat a whole bowl of them, but when you chop them up and add them into a salad, they add a really nice zip. They're sort of like arugula. They're a bit peppery. They've got a little bit more chew to them, but they're delicious and full of awesome vitamins and nutrients that you need. So absolutely eat your radish leaves. I think I'm going to have to reorganize this greenhouse soon. As you can see, these leaves are getting quite big and they're starting to shade and overhang onto other plants, and that's just going to dwarf the smaller plants. Even the tomatoes that are beside the squash here are starting to get a little crowded out. So I think next week I'll be sorting things out, trying to give everything a little bit more space, and then of course, hopefully shortly after that, they'll be in the garden. Our potted cucumber is just getting huge, which is really exciting. The sun and heat we've had for a few days have really made a difference. These are the seed sunflowers. It sure doesn't take them very long to get big once they are established. Sunflowers are one of the quicker growing things. Okay, so I took a little bit of time this morning, and as you can see, I moved the zucchini and the buttercup squash over there by the wall. I spread out the tomato plants. Maybe you can see some space in between those trays, just to give the plants a little bit more room to get bushy and nice and big without overlapping anything. And then over here, I've got some more squash, and I've just sort of given a little bit of space around those plants, again, just so that they're not shading anything else and so that they can get a little bit bigger. I don't want to spend too much time reorganizing the whole greenhouse. I'm hoping most of these plants will be in the ground soon. So I think there's better ways to spend my time. I just wanted to show you that I did shift things around. Don't be scared to do that, because as things grow, they develop different needs. You see those little buds on this raspberry cane? Those are gonna be berries.